Akinjo to Flagler. Gives the ball to Akinjo on the right wing. Rondell Walker on him. Akinjo up with an 18-footer. It's good! Akinjo with a bucket. Bears lead by two. 12 seconds to play. Bryce Williams into the front court. Williams gives the ball to Bryce Thompson. 5 seconds to go. Rondell Walker likely for three. Shot is no good. Bears win! Bears win in overtime over Oklahoma State. 66-64.
Baylor survives a scare, and that would have probably pretty much wrapped up the Big 12 title for the KU Jayhawks had Baylor lost last night. But instead, they found a way to win in overtime in Stillwater, 66-64. TCU winning over West Virginia at home, 77-67. Tonight, it's Oklahoma at Texas Tech at 7 o'clock, and of course, K-State at KU. Sunflower Showdown Part 2, this time in Lawrence. 7:30 pregame tonight on Z96.3 The Lake, and we will break down that game coming up here in just a little bit. Stay tuned. We got a lot to cover when it comes to the Michigan-Wisconsin incident that happened over the weekend with head coaches Juwan Howard and Greg Gard. We'll go over that and why it's been blown out of proportion, because that's just what we do in society today. Also, there are some new high school football rules that have been released for the upcoming high school football season. One in particular that we will address that has caused some confusion in recent years, and one that even confused me last year. And now I'm very happy to say that it won't be as confusing. So, you know, eventually we get it right, and we'll explain that coming up in a little bit. But first, local sports. We begin with Dusty.
Yeah, we'll get things started tonight on Kitty Country 94 with our high school wrestling locker room chats, and they'll begin around 5:15. Kitty Country 94 and kittycountry94.com. We'll talk with the coaches of Beloit, Osborne, and Smith Center, recapping the regional tournament this past weekend and looking ahead to state this weekend for Beloit and Smith Center as well. So stay tuned for that. If you ever miss our locker room chats, or if you're not in the area and you want to listen to them live online, you can always listen at kittycountry94.com. Also, high school hoops coming up tonight in the area on Kitty Country 94 and the Beloit Trojan Channel. Beloit is at Smith Center tonight. Pre-game coverage will begin around 5:50 this evening for Beloit at Smith Center here tonight in high school hoops. Again, Kitty Country 94 and the Beloit Trojan Channel at ncksports.com with a live video stream. Also, the final night of the regular season for our 1A schools in the Northern Plains League, as Substate will start later this week. Regular season finales tonight in the MPL. Lakeside is at Sylvan Lucas. Osborne at Rock Hills. St. John's Tipton on the road at Lincoln tonight. Southern Cloud is hosting Natoma. Thunder Ridge is at home against Wilson. Tescott at Chase tonight in the MPL. And in the NCKL, it is Concordia at Clay Center. And back in the North Central Activities Association, Ellsworth is at Sacred Heart. And at Southeast Saline is at Republic County tonight. So that's a look at the full schedule for what's going on here tonight in high school hoops. If you ever have any questions about what's going on in the area, you can always, again, visit ncksports.com. And everything you need to know about high school sports here in the NCAA Northern Plains League and other area league schools, including Smith Center and Concordia, right there at ncksports.com.
Before we preview tonight's games, let people know about our Substate schedule later this week.
Yeah,
and don't forget state wrestling coverage.
Yeah, later this week we will have the Lakeside basketball teams and their Substate games, which we would have on Thursday, the Lakeside boys hosting Oberlin, and that'll start pregame probably about 5:50 there on Thursday for that boys contest. Tip-off is at 6 o'clock, and then on Friday, the Lakeside girls are going to Oberlin to take on Decatur Community, so pregame coverage same time, about 5:50, tip-off at 6 there on Friday for high school hoops. And as Wade said, we do have high school wrestling coming up on Friday and Saturday. State wrestling, 3-2-1A in Hayes for Beloit and Smith Center wrestlers that have qualified for state, so we'll keep you updated on all 10 of our area wrestlers that made it in class 3-2-1A, and we'll have those reports coming up on Friday. We'll start in the morning with those reports, and then we'll have more of them during our basketball coverage once we get into the evening hours, and then Saturday morning we'll pick it back up on Katie Kenshin 94 with reports each half hour. Should begin probably around 10 o'clock both days, probably 10:30 on Friday, then 10 o'clock on Saturday, just to get things rolling there for the state wrestling coverage coming up this weekend. So we'll keep you updated on all the area wrestlers there.
All right, stay tuned. Coming up on the Sports Ticket, we'll hear from Tom Izzo about people talking about eliminating handshake lines just because two coaches couldn't get along. Yeah, you're going to want to hear that. It's pretty good stuff. At least I think it is. All right, high school basketball tonight on the radio on Kitty Country 94 and kittycountry94.com. The Smith Center and Lady Red ranked 6th in 2A, the latest KBCA rankings. Hosting Beloit, Smith Center ladies already have wrapped up a number one seed. They're going to be hosting Plainville in the first round of Substate coming up next Tuesday. Beloit, meanwhile, they have something to play for big time tonight, and that is you're playing for a coin flip. That's what you're playing for. But it's an important coin flip because right now Beloit is the 5 seed at 9-10, Council Grove the 4 seed. They're 10-10 as they lost last night. That opened the door for Beloit. If they can beat Smith Center this evening, then Beloit would have the same record as Council Grove. It comes down to a coin flip. I don't know who calls it. I don't know how the whole process works other than somehow there's a coin flip.
Mm-hmm.
And if Beloit wins that coin flip, they would get a home game and be the 4 seed on Tuesday. And if they end up losing a coin flip, they would go to Council Grove. And that's a considerable bit of a road trip for the first round of Substate. However, if Beloit loses tonight, there is no coin flip whatsoever. Beloit would go to Council Grove next Tuesday for the first round of 3A girls substate play. And here's Shauna Remus on the challenge of facing the Smith Center Lady Red in Smith Center tonight.
They're going to be very, very tough. They're big, they're long, they're experienced, their guards are sound. So we're just going to have to go play our game and play our tempo for sure. But they're a very talented team, so we'll go in there with just the determination that these kids have every game, hoping that we can knock them off.
And Smith Center head coach Nick Lynn, he's kept an eye on Beloit this season.
We kind of follow them, and I know they have the freshman presence from the inside and I got some three-point shooters, and I think we'll match up well with them, and we're looking forward to that game.
Smith Center might be down a player tonight due to injury. And as we talked about, it's you know, Smith Center and Beloit, they're not in the same leagues. I think it's a little bit of a rivalry when they play each other. It's a very respectful rivalry, and especially in the basketball side of things. And these two teams usually play at the end of the year, like they have for quite some time. And I like the fact that they play each other. But really tonight for Smith Center, there's nothing on the line whatsoever. There's nothing here for them. They don't enhance their substate seeding based on the standings I saw. They're the number one seed. They know who they're going to play. But they're still going to obviously want to win, and they're very competitive. And that group of girls, of course, a lot of them were a part of the state championship volleyball team. So it's still going to be a really good game, don't get me wrong. But really, technically, there's nothing on the line for Smith Center tonight. For Beloit, there's the chance of having a coin flip that if you lose the coin flip, then it really doesn't matter either.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to give yourself the chance to have a coin flip to try to host that first-round game at Substate coming up next week on Tuesday, and the Smith Center girls be in action on Monday, because that's what Keisha does to make it more confusing. Is, you know, to me, it's just like put all the girls' games on Monday, all the boys' games on Tuesday, or vice versa. Instead, you got to think about it and go, okay, 1A, 3A, 5A boys are on Monday, 2, 4, 6 on Tuesday. What? And it gets confusing. But bottom line is Smith Center girls are going to play on Monday. Beloit girls will play on Tuesday in a first round of Substate. And Smith Center is going to host Plainville because they haven't won a game yet this year. And Smith Center beat Plainville 83-10 to start the year. So Smith Center is probably going to go on to the Substate semifinals, just going to go on a limb there. And then Beloit, of course, like we said, could be the 4 or the 5, depending on a coin flip, if they win tonight. If they don't win tonight, there is no coin flip. Beloit will be on the road as a 5 seed and be on the same side of the bracket as Southeast of Saline, who will be the number 1 seed in that Substate. So that's a look at the girls' side of things. And last year, Smith Center girls won that matchup in Beloit. And it should be fun. I'm looking forward to covering that game tonight up in Smith Center. On the boys' side, it looks to be a mismatch. The Beloit boys are 13-6. They are 7-3, finished second in the league behind Southeast of Saline. And Smith Center's lost 17 in a row since they beat Central Plains in the second game of the season. But I remember last year, Smith Center played Hoxie first round of Substate. They're only down by 4 at halftime. People are like, what's going on? Is that a typo? No, it wasn't. So anything is possible, and it is the senior night for Smith Center, and it's their last home games of the year, at least for the boys. And so you just, if you're Beloit, you got to focus on the task at hand, and that is the final tune-up before Substate action, which Beloit looks like will be hosting Riley County on Monday night, a team they beat by 32. But Riley County's, I've been told that their star player, Trey Harmison, is back, which is amazing. He tore his ACL in October. It's amazing what medical technology can do nowadays with torn ACLs. I saw Ellie Woodall of Sacred Heart Girls tore her ACL in June, had surgery in July. She is back on the floor here a couple weeks ago in February with a knee brace. It used to be you have an ACL tear, you were done for a year, maybe a year and a half to two. Now you've got kids like Trey Harmison that apparently is able to come back in a span of, what, 4.5 months? That's insane. That's insane. But that looks to be who Beloit boys will play on Monday. That's not guaranteed for sure, but I'm pretty sure of it. And so that could be an interesting and tougher matchup than people might think for Beloit if Harmison is back. But what at what level is he playing? Who knows if that's all true. I'm just going off of some things that people have told me. But Beloit doesn't need to worry about that right now. They want to focus on their final tune-up before Substate, according to head coach Ryan Eilert.
This time of year, the kids want to play, and by this point, you know, you're doing a lot of review and stuff. And so, yeah, I think it's good to have that game on Tuesday. And you know, our guys need to show up ready to play and kind of build and really try to take some momentum into Substate.
And Patrick Miller, head coach in his first year with Smith Center, has been assistant prior to that on Beloit.
Well, I think Beloit has a very good guard-centered team that likes to move the ball really quickly. And then they have really good shooters, so we just have to defend the outside, and hopefully we can work through the post and offense and compete with them.
All right, so Smith Center boys looking to pull off an upset tonight. Really nothing on the line here either for Beloit. Doesn't matter whether they finish the 2 or the 3 seed, because the semifinals will be in Minneapolis. There's no home date that's at stake there. Beloit's already wrapped up a home first-round game. I guess it would... Because I think Council Grove, if I remember correctly, they could tie with Beloit as well for the 2 seed if Beloit lost tonight. If Beloit wins tonight, they assure themselves a 2 seed. So then it would be about a matchup, you know, playing Riley County or playing, I forgot who, the Lions. That would be the difference tonight. And so there's a little bit there. And then for Smith Center, they know that they're going to be the 8 seed for their sub-state. They're going to play either Hill City or Trigo coming up next Tuesday. So that's the matchups tonight. Smith Center hosting Beloit. Pregame around 5:50 tonight on Katie Country 94 and katiecountry94.com. And for you Smith Center and Beloit fans, you can watch it as well. Live video stream at ncksports.com via Beloit Trojan channel. All right. John Bowden put this on Facebook. I happen to see it. So, John, thanks for bringing it to our attention. Have you had a chance to read it? Because you were tagged on it as well.
I have not.
All right. New high school football rules for upcoming season. And the one that stands out is the intentional grounding call. There are a lot of people that thought the intentional grounding at the high school level was the same as college and pro, which was not. The high school rule was always intended. It was never about being out of the pocket. It was never about throwing the ball back to the line of scrimmage. It was there needed to be a receiver in the area. That's it. That was the requirement. And if you threw the ball 10 yards above the receiver and into the track, really there's no receiver in the area. So it was intentional grounding. And I saw that when Ellsworth played Beloit this year in football. That was a great play by Will Cravens. The scramble, get out of the pocket. He probably thought the same thing after watching college and pro football that, you know, hey, I threw the ball away. I got out of the pocket. Well, guess what? High school has evolved, and they are going to basically have the exact same rule as college and pro, and that is that there is no intentional grounding if you get outside the pocket and the pass reaches the neutral zone or the extension of the neutral zone, which is basically the line of scrimmage. And so they like that. Also, will eliminate possibly some late, cheap backside blocks and chop blocks if the quarterback is scrambling. So, you know, if he knows he can't throw it away, then he tucks it. It extends the play, and so there could be a chance for, you know, maybe a little bit more injury. So that's part of the thinking behind it. I love it. About time. I've been saying this for a long time, that many rules should be consistent all the way through, from pro to college to high school. I know there's some rules that have to be different. I get that. The different level of play, the size of the players, the speed of the players, so forth and so on. So I get all of that. There are some minor changes involving game clock and play clock procedures. The players will be able to wear the number 0 as a jersey number starting in 2022. So there you go. Let's see here. Game equipment, there's some rules. But, you know, I'm not going to bore you with all the intricacies of some of these little rules. The big one is that they're going to basically implement the normal intentional grounding rule that you see at the college and pro level. So that works for me. Less confusion.
Absolutely. If you can streamline as many rules as possible in football, it makes it easier as a broadcaster. There's no doubt about that. Because and easier as a player and a coach, too, really. I mean, because if you see these things on Sunday and then they don't pertain to your game on Friday,
right,
like, what's the point? Like, what are we doing here? Like, because I've had multiple occasions where that intentional grounding thing came in, too, and I'm like, well, he was out of the pocket. How's that intentional ground? You know,
yeah,
like,
I did it last year in that game, and I felt stupid because I didn't realize it was that much different at the high school level. So I had that wrong myself, and many fans were screaming in the stands about how can that be a call. They, too, just like me, we had it wrong because we didn't know the high school rule was completely different for intentional grounding. And so now it'll be consistent, so there'll be less people being confused by it, less people screaming at the referees, at least on that call.
Yeah.
Although probably still – argue that it's not intentional grounding, or it is intentional grounding. Fans just like to complain no matter what.
Pocket is still perceptive for the officials in high school. You know, they don't have the
tackle box.
they don't have the luxury of being in different spots and having extra right. things to look at.
Right. So, yeah, I'm happy that they're making that change. All right, K-State is at KU tonight, and this is a game where K-State, if they could get a win, would be a huge feather in their cap. Bill Self believes that anybody that finishes 500 in the Big 12 should be in the NCAA tournament. Bruce Weber said that, whether he's making it up or not, I don't know, saying that one Big Ten coach told him that all 10 of the teams in the Big 12 are NCAA tournament teams. Which, you know, I mean, Oklahoma State's really good, almost beat Baylor last night. West Virginia's been right there. They're at the bottom of the Big 12. Iowa State looks like a 9 seed. They're at the bottom of the Big 12. K-State's above those. They're in the middle of the pack in the Big 12 at 6-8. I think that makes some sense. But
one
first,
of them can't be an NCAA tournament team, though,
right?
Because Oklahoma
right.
State can't make
but
it.
But what they're saying is
yeah,
they play
they're
like
good
one.
Enough to be.
They
yeah.
clearly are. Last night they lost by yeah. two. They're the 10th ranked team in the
oh,
country
yeah.
at home and went to overtime. So whether they're eligible or not, what we're saying is they are a
yeah.
they are good enough to be an NCAA tournament team. That was the point of it. But yeah, technically they can't be in. Only 9 teams are eligible in the Big 12 to make the NCAA tournament. That's correct. And only 9 teams will be at the Big 12 tournament. So that'll be different
yeah.
as well. And I still think it's a sham that. That's the punishment yeah, that these kids got at Oklahoma State. It's a joke. But anyway, first time that K-State and KU played, K-State had the big lead. They shot lights out first half. Nigel Pack went nuts. He had 38 points, and K-State still found a way to somehow lose the game. And KU played great second half, dominated the glass, and as Bill Self said after the game, there's no doubt we were the tougher team in the second half. And that was right after Bill Self's dad had passed away. So KU played inspired in the second half, and they battled and they battled and they battled. And Ochai Agbaji was great down the stretch, and they end up winning the ball game by 3. Bill Self says that his team needs to be better on defense this time against Pack and K-State in Lawrence tonight.
Yes, that will be an emphasis to take away as many looks off the catch. But when you do that, now you give little quick guards a chance to get their shoulders past you, and they touch the paint, and that opens everybody else up. So we just got to guard a lot better.
And Bruce Weber, head coach of Kansas State. Tempo will be important tonight.
When I say low scoring, I'm talking the 60s, not the 70s. And, you know, we had the special half against them at home. Obviously, Nigel was magical. And, you know, so you got the 50, but then you only got 25 in the second half. And so I think if we're going to have a chance, it's probably got to be in the 60s and hope we're making shots and taking care of the ball. I think the biggest thing is keeping them out of transition.
Yeah, transition's big. If KU can get an open floor, they can kill you. The other thing that's big for K-State, rebounding. They got absolutely annihilated on the glass in the second half of the last meeting. That was a huge factor in why KU came back and won. Those 50-50 balls, KU got them in the second half. K-State didn't. And Nigel Pack, can you count on him to score 38 tonight in Lawrence? I don't think you can count on that.
No.
Although I think a Noel's capable of going off for 30 if he gets hot as well. But to me, the biggest key when you go into Lawrence and play the Jayhawks at Allen Fieldhouse, the number one key is don't get blown out of the gym by the time the first media timeout hits. You've got to weather the storm. You can't be down 12-2 going into the first media timeout because it's just a huge mountain to climb. And we've seen K-State teams many times go to Lawrence, and it's over at the 16 or 12-minute mark. Now, we have seen times, and I'd say more often than not lately, where K-State can go into KU and give them – pretty good ball game. And I don't know what the line is on this game tonight. I haven't seen it. I guess I can pull it up and see it. But I would say that I think, you know, KU hasn't rolled a lot of teams this year. And also, K-State hasn't exactly been rolled by people. When they have lost, we talk about all the close losses that they had yesterday. We talked about on the show yesterday about, you know, how many close losses they've had. So that tells you that, quite honestly, you're looking at a team like K-State to be right there with KU tonight. Do you think this is going to be a blowout, or do you think this is going to be a competitive game to where there's a chance that K-State could pull off the upset tonight?
You know, there's been so many good teams at K-State that have gone in there and just been blown out, right? You know,
absolutely. But also, I argue some of these KU teams that blew them out were better than this year's.
This year's KU team, yeah. I don't think it's going to be like a 30-point blowout in the end or anything like that. I think KU might pull away in the second half. I don't know, I'm thinking like a 10 to 12 point game tonight.
Well, Vegas is saying 12. So you think K-State covers 12? I think they do.
I'll say they do.
I think K-State covers 12. I think KU wins by 7 or 8, something like that. 7, 8, 9. That's what I'm thinking. Single digits, but close to 10. That would be my pick in it. And the over-under on it is 142.5, which basically means that they're thinking it's going to be like a 76-64, 77-65 type of game. And that could be. But I agree with Bruce Weber. It'd behoove K-State to slow down the tempo and not let KU get in transition. If this game's in the 50s or 60s, K-State has a better chance of winning.
I'd say if K-State covers the spread, I'd take the under.
I agree with that. I agree with that as well. I agree with
that.
But
if they don't, then it's no holds barred. You just never know.
That's exactly right. So K-State at KU tonight, 7:30 pregame on Z96.3 late. KU ranked 5th in the country now, 22-4 overall, 11-2 in the Big 12. K-State 14-11, 6-8 in the Big 12. We mentioned Baylor won last night. So here are the standings in the Big 12 going into tonight. KU is 11-2, Baylor's 11-4, Texas Tech 10-4. Those are the only teams I'm going to mention because those are the only teams that have a chance to win the Big 12 championship. Let me ask you this. Is this Big 12 race, assuming KU wins tonight, and I think most people, even K-State fans, would say KU wins tonight, assuming that KU wins tonight, is the Big 12 race basically over?
Yeah, I think it's over right now. So
you think
yes.
It's over before tonight? Okay.
I just don't think K-State has a chance to win. So in my mind, I say they don't have a chance. I mean, they always have a chance. Mm-hmm. Like I say, we don't ever give 0% chance, but
right.
Or I don't anyway. But I feel like KU's been in the driver's seat and they're winning these. They don't lose at home to teams like K-State, right? Like so, right. I have that just in my mind that they'll win tonight.
Well, let's just go.
Feel like it's pretty well done.
Well, let's go with the numbers here. At Allen Fieldhouse, KU is 24-1 against K-State in the Big 12 era.
Yeah.
24-1. Bruce Weber is 0-10 at KU against Bill Self.
Jim Rulridge is the only K-State coach to win there.
In the Big 12
era. Since the Big 12 started.
Right. So it doesn't sound likely that K-State's going to win that game. So I think it's probably somewhat safe to say, although you never know. Sports is a weird, weird, weird animal. And when you got a rivalry game, sometimes weird things can happen. If Abaji gets hurt, I mean, that could change everything.
Yeah, things change with those kind of
sure.
things. But, you know, you always ask these questions based on if these teams are
right.
at the capacity that they're at going into this
well,
right now.
I mean, yeah, obviously. But my point is that anything can happen.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely, yeah.
I mean, foul trouble, that can also happen. So we immediately just go in thinking, well, everything's going to be equal. If everything's equal, KU wins because they are a more talented team. And that's why they play the games, people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what people thought the Chiefs were going to win the Super Bowl last year, lost 31-9. You know, some people thought the Chiefs were going to beat the Bengals, and the Chiefs lost to the Bengals. So this is why you play the games. KU should have never lost to Northern Iowa. I can go on and on and on, but that's why we play the games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we hadn't gotten foul trouble, well, that's part of the game. Well, if this guy didn't get hurt, that's part of the game.
Yeah.
That's why we play the games. That's why we don't play them on paper, because otherwise there's no need to even watch them. And thus, lots of people wouldn't get a lot of money, and there'd be no TV deals. So to me, the Big 12 race is over. I agree with you, and here's why. So you look at the Big 12 race – and Baylor right now has 4 losses. Texas Tech has 4 losses. KU's already done with Texas Tech, and they split with them. They have a 2-game lead in the loss column. So let's assume that KU wins tonight. They're 12-2. They only have 4 conference games left. At Baylor, let's say they lose at Baylor. So they still have a 1-game lead over Baylor. They get TCU twice in 3 days. They should win both. Although, who knows, at TCU, you never know. KU's lost there once or twice before. Home against TCU, you figure that's a win. And then Texas at home, they owe them one. Now, Texas beat them last year in Lawrence, by the way, although that wasn't with a full crowd. And Texas at home. So when you look at KU's schedule, you're like, K-State at home, that's a win. At Baylor, okay. If they win at Baylor, that's absolutely over.
Yeah.
But if they lose at Baylor, you still... You know, you have 3 losses. Baylor has 4. You beat TCU and Texas. You win it by a game. People are going to pick KU to beat TCU on the road and at home in 3 days. And then, of course, beat Texas at home. So as long as KU just loses at Baylor, they're going to win this thing outright. Here's the thing I'm going to say. Baylor's going to lose before that. Or not before that. Baylor's going to lose one more game in this conference. That's my prediction. I think Texas Tech will, too. I think Kansas can lose 2 more games and still win this thing outright. That's what I think. because there's no gimme in this Big 12. We just saw it last night. We just saw it last night that there is no gimmies in the Big 12. I mean, Oklahoma State nearly beat Baylor. Honestly, you could argue they should have beat Baylor last night. And you look at Baylor's schedule, you know, KU, listen, yeah, but then they go to Texas. They could easily lose out at Texas. And then Baylor's got to play Iowa State at home. That's probably a win. Okay, I give you that. But they could easily lose to Texas. That takes care of Baylor. K-State goes to Texas Tech. They beat Texas Tech already. You know, Texas Tech can't afford any more losses if they want to get in the Big 12. And Texas Tech's got to go to Oklahoma State. And we know that's not a gimme either. So when you look at the standings right now, and there's got to be some game here that we're missing on the Big 12 schedule they don't have here for Texas Tech. There we go. Texas Tech's got to go to TCU. Texas Tech, they host Oklahoma tonight. I mean, do you really think Texas Tech's going to run the table the rest of the way? I mean, Texas Tech right now is 10-4. Do we think they're going to win the next four games? I bet you they stumble in one of them.
Yeah.
And I think Baylor stumbles in one of their games. Now, they've got three more games left. And Texas would be the one that you could say they would be the obvious one on the road in Austin. But I think KU is going to win it outright without any help from anybody losing anymore anyway. Mm. But in case KU would stumble, I think at worst KU's got to share the title already, for sure.
Yeah, this is it's funny. It seems like we talk about this every year about, you know, is the Big 12 as good as we think it is if KU can just roll through, right?
Right.
Like,
and they haven't rolled through.
No, they haven't, but their record says that they have, right? Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, if KU can still figure out how to win these games at the end like they do a lot of years, win on the road like they do a lot of years, and however that happens, they do it. They've only lost two games in the conference, and so you're kind of looking and understanding that it is a better conference top to bottom. There's no question. Than maybe some years that it has been. But Baylor's the only team that I ever thought in my mind had a chance other than Kansas to win this conference coming into the year. I mean, and that's proven true, right? And I just I don't feel like Baylor's, you know, like you said, it might be KU, but KU still has to lose another one and Baylor has to win out, which is
Baylor's got the toughest.
Not been what they've been able to do this. I mean, they were swept by Texas Tech.
Right. And so, really, Texas Tech is the second-best team in this conference right now, not Baylor.
Yeah, based on that.
Because
sure.
Texas Tech swept Baylor. Texas Tech, Baylor's got to play at Texas. Tech is done with Texas, beat them twice. And Tech's got to be kicking themselves about that loss in Manhattan.
Oh, 100%. Because
they win that game, there's pressure on KU every single night. Right now, KU's got leeway. So the new top 25 came out. KU is ranked fifth, by the way. Gonzaga 1, Arizona 2, Auburn 3, Purdue 4, KU 5, Kentucky 6. Listen, Kentucky kicked the you-know-what out of Kansas in Lawrence. I think Kentucky should be ranked ahead of Kansas. I know Kentucky has one more loss, but it's like if Kentucky had considerably more losses, I understand being behind Kansas. They have one more loss. I'd put them above Kansas. It'd be one thing if they barely beat Kansas. They whip Kansas.
Yeah, if they barely beat them in Rupp, too.
Yeah,
right. And they whipped them at Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah, this was in Allen Fieldhouse. They whipped them. So, to me, Kentucky should be ranked higher than Kansas. Duke is at 7, Villanova at 8, Texas Tech at 9, Baylor at 10. And then the Big 12 has Texas. Somehow they're always staying in the top 25, even though they lose. They are 20th. And that's it for the Big 12. So we talk about how tough the Big 12 is, but there's only four teams ranked out of the 10.
Yeah. It's I don't know. I think the Big 12 is overvalued this year, to be completely honest with you.
I think they are a little bit too.
But it is what it is, right? They're middle-of-the-pack teams are just beating up on each other.
Yep. A pair of 20-point outings and two KU victories earned KU senior Ochai Agbaji his fourth Big 12 Player of the Week honor. He shares it this week with Iowa State guard Isaiah Brockington. Agbaji averaged 21.5 points in two games, 13-14 in line, and two wins for the fifth-ranked Jayhawks. Now we turn our attention to the big story in sports, and that is Juwan Howard versus Greg Gard. It is a no-holds-barred UFC battle. It'll be a cage match someday. No, I'm kidding. Juwan Howard's like 6'10", and Greg Gard's 5'9". But yet, Juwan Howard was worried for his life or something the other day. Well, let's go over it here, and then we'll issue our two cents. Michigan head coach Juwan Howard, if you didn't know, he got an altercation after the game against Wisconsin the other day. He received a 5-game suspension for his role in a post-game scuffle. That was on Sunday. It'll keep him off the sidelines for the remainder of the regular season, the Big Ten announced yesterday. He's the only coach involved in Sunday's melee facing a suspension, although there are three players, two for Michigan and one for Wisconsin, that each received 1-game suspensions. Howard was also fined $40,000 by the league. Wisconsin head coach Greg Gard was fined $10,000. And here is a statement. Big Ten Conference coaches and student-athletes are expected to display the highest level of sportsmanship conduct, according to Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren. I am grateful for the partnership of Michigan Athletics Director Ward Manuel and Wisconsin's Athletic Director Chris McIntosh. Our expectation is that the incident on Sunday will provide our coaches and student-athletes with the opportunity to reflect, learn, and move forward in a manner that demonstrates decorum and leadership on and off the court. Juwan Howard finally did apologize yesterday after the suspension. Here's his apology, word for word. You ready?
Yeah.
After taking time to reflect on all that happened, I realized how unacceptable both my actions and words were and how they affected so many. I am truly sorry. I am offering my sincerest apology to my players and their families, my staff, my family, and the Michigan fans around the world. I would like to personally apologize to Wisconsin's assistant coach, Joe Krabbenhoft, and his family, too. End of quote. Couple things about the apology. First of all, why couldn't you have done that right away? Why couldn't you have done that the day of the game, like later that night? Why did it take you this long to issue an apology? Second, when you apologize, it's important to get a few things correct. Like, one, the name of the guy you hit! His name's not Joe. It's Joel. And you're disrespected by a timeout. So that mean that Joel Krabbenhoft can come slap you in the head? Because that's kind of disrespectful and you don't even know his name. Whoops. Also, in the apology, no mention of Greg Gard whatsoever,
no.
The head coach of Wisconsin. Do you think that's really a contrite apology?
No, that's something Michigan said, put this out, dude.
Yes. And Howard probably said, sure, but I'm not going to say anything about Greg Gard.
Yeah. And that's why it took so long, because Michigan told him to do it. I mean, there's no doubt that
right. It happens in a lot of
apologies. This isn't what he wanted to do.
Well, that's like, I'm sure eventually the Cowboys told Dak Prescott to apologize after he condoned and allowed, said fans, you know, good for them for throwing stuff at officials, which didn't look good on Dak Prescott's part. So eventually, when an apology takes so long to be formed, and at least, I mean, you may say, well, what do you mean long? That was, you know, 24 hours basically, or a little over 24 hours. That was not a night game late at night, Michigan Wisconsin. That was an afternoon game on Sunday. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, before Juwan Howard goes to bed, he should probably be writing the apology. That's just me. If you truly believe you did something wrong, now I don't think he does. I believe Juwan Howard knows that, you know, I did wrong in regards to I put some players at risk by what happened. But I don't think he thinks he's wrong in retaliating. He looks at his self defense. That's what he said. Which I don't see it. I don't. I've looked at the video millions of times. I don't know where he's coming from on all this. But let's go through a couple of things that are out there. First of all, this is interesting because it is funny when people can go back and provide evidence to support your argument. And I know that's a crazy concept in today's society, actually provide factual evidence. Juwan Howard all riled up about a timeout. That's what he said. He said in his post-game conference, he didn't appreciate timeout. He told Greg Gard he didn't appreciate timeout. I'll remember that, so forth and so on. It was a 15-point game when the timeout was called with about 15 seconds to go by Wisconsin because they had their backups, their scrubs in, and for some reason Michigan was pressing down 15 on the road at Wisconsin. And so Greg Gard said, hey, I'm going to call a timeout, and I can reset the 10 count. I can get across half court, and we can dribble out the clock. We're not going to take a shot. So he's all upset about a late timeout. Do you know, just over a week ago, Michigan played Ohio State and Juwan Howard called a timeout down by 14 with 35 seconds to go?
I saw that.
Isn't that a little hypocritical? And by the way, if you're sitting here going, well, he called a timeout to put a whole bunch of scrubs in. No. Hunter Dickinson shot the next shot, who's their star stud, who could have thought about going pro after last year. He took the next shot out of the timeout. So Juwan Howard had starters in the game down 14 with 35 seconds to go, called a timeout at home against Ohio State. Greg Gard did the exact same thing, called a timeout with 20 seconds left or 15, whatever it was, at home, up 14. Be consistent. And here's the thing. To me, you might not like it, but Juwan Howard has the right to press as long as he wants to press with whoever's on the floor for whoever. He does. Mm-hmm. Now, if Juwan Howard's up 30 and he's pressing Wisconsin, a lot of people are going to say that is a bad look. But technically, he has the right to press and do whatever he wants. He's within the rules. Greg Gard is totally within the rules to call a timeout if you're going to be pressing and doesn't want to turn the ball over. And people go, well, who cares? You're up 15. Why does it matter? Because you're trying to get those kids to learn the right way to get it across pressure. And these backups, you don't – like one Wisconsin player pointed out yesterday on social media, he said, listen, I respect Coach Gard for what he did because when you go in as a backup, you don't want to be embarrassed. And this was a national televised game. And so he probably saved a player an embarrassing turnover by calling the timeout. And I can understand that. That's coming from a player's perspective. I respect it. Mm-hmm. So to me, Juwan Howard, Greg Gard shouldn't be really crazily mad about Juwan Howard pressing in that situation. And he should just let it go. And Juwan Howard should just let it go that he called a timeout with 15 seconds to go. Instead, these egos for, I think, both guys, quite honestly, because I'm not going to give a free pass to Greg Gard. I think that was gamesmanship, what he did. I think Juwan Howard started it. He wants to say, Gard started and escalated because he grabbed my arm trying to tell me something. Well, guess what? They went back and showed all the interactions between Greg Gard and Juwan Howard. Since they played each other the last couple years, coaches, mm-hmm. after the games, guess what? Very cordial, laughing with each other. And guess what? Greg Gard has his hands on the arm of Juwan Howard, and Juwan Howard wasn't threatened. So it's a crock. It's a crock sitting here saying, oh, you know, I'm just defending myself. No, Greg Gard didn't even act like he was going to punch you you-know-where below the belt. He didn't do anything like that. So this is all blown out of proportion. And Juwan Howard is guilty of escalating out the blown out of proportion part. He wants to act like everything was started by Wisconsin. It was not. You know, the thing that was started at all was you're pressing, which is within your means to do. And if you're pressing up 15 with 25 seconds to go in the game, you shouldn't have any right to question what the other coach is doing when he's at least put his backups in the game and you got your starters and you're pressing. And why are you pressing against backups down 15 with 20 seconds to go anyway? But once again, I defer, and I'll say, you know what? You can coach your team the way you want to coach it. Fran Franchella made a good point last night. I thought he said, listen, when coaches want to start coaching for both teams, we have problems. And to me, that's really what both coaches are doing. It was Juwan Howard making it very clear that he didn't like the timeout. And to me, Greg Gard was a little passive-aggressive. He called the timeout because I think he didn't like the press, if he was honest with everybody. I think off the record with a beer in his hand, he'd say, listen, hell no, I didn't like what Juwan Howard did. That's why I called the timeout. He could cover it up all he wants about, I want to protect my backups. And that's fine. That makes some sense. Don't get me wrong. But here's a couple things that have been popping up here. There are people, believe it or not, there are activists that are trying to make this a racial thing. This is ridiculous. This is absolutely ludicrous and ridiculous. Because this is not a race thing. I'm sorry, that's my opinion and I'll stick to it. There are times where I might disagree with other people, even in our own area, about certain things in regards to race. But the fact that we're bringing up the race card in this situation is ridiculous. This was two coaches that have got along fine with each other before, that have no history against each other. It's a heated competition. One happens to be black. One happens to be white. Let's get past that. One 6'10", the other's 5'9". What are we going to do, start talking about discrimination because one guy's short? I mean, where does it end? Like, here's a thought, personal accountability. They're both grown men making millions of dollars as coaches. I think it's okay for Greg Gard to come out and apologize too, to be quite honest and be fair about it. But when you're bringing up the race card, are you kidding me? Yeah, there are people that have jumped all over saying Juwan Howard should be fired. There are other people saying Juwan Howard shouldn't be suspended at all. There are other people saying he shouldn't be suspended for 5 games. We said on this show yesterday that we thought the right punishment was the rest of the regular season, which is the next 5 games. That's exactly what the Big Ten decided as well, along with Michigan. And I'm okay with that. So Juwan Howard's going to come back for the Big Ten tournament, and if they somehow make the NIT or the NCAA, he'll coach in that as well, assuming there's no more altercations or problems. And Juwan Howard, if you want to make this a racial thing, this is not his first altercation as a coach. But those activists conveniently forget that as well. Mm-hmm. because this is just an opportunity to jump on some boat and add to the narrative of racial stuff. And I'm going to tell you something. I support people that protest and what they fight for. And I've said this over and over, millions of times. I'm cool with if truckers want to protest, fine. You do it in a peaceful way, I have no problem with it. If we want people to protest the Black Lives Matters movement, they want to be out and protest and do it peacefully, I'm okay with it. I really am. I think it's the beauty of our country. If we can actually have the freedom to go out and not have to worry about being beheaded like you do in some countries, that women can fight for equal rights. Soccer players today are celebrating a victory because they're going to get paid equal pay, all right? So that's tremendous. They stood up for what they believed in. They got what they wanted, equal pay, right? That's terrific. So if you want to stand up for something, I am all for it. Now, whether I believe that you're doing the right thing or not, you have the freedom to do that in this country. Absolutely. But let's stop, and this is for both sides, let's stop making everything, every single thing happen to be we play the victim. Every single time, whether it's you're a white person or you're a black person, we're always sitting here trying to make out like it's always the one person's fault entirely. Here's a crazy, crazy, crazy premise. Maybe two people, one that happened to be black and one that happened to be white, flat out, regardless of their race, simply didn't get along and simply put their egos ahead of their own teams. Is that humanly possible? Hell yeah, it is. But we wouldn't want to talk about that. We want to talk about, well, okay, this guy is black, this guy's white, let's somehow make this a racial thing. This was not racial. What happened at the end of that game was competitive fire. That was two guys with huge egos that got in the way. It was one guy gamesmanship with another. That's how I see it. And you made two wrongs, don't make a right. And by the way, there were things that happened after Juwan Howard threw his punch or slap or whatever that there was, you know, reaction from some of the other Wisconsin people on their bench, and then players got involved. But it's the leaders of the team, which are the two head coaches. They're the ones that are responsible for what happened. And I don't care if they're both white, they're both black, they're both purple, they're both pink. They are the head coaches of their team. I don't care if they're a 4'8" tall or 6'10" tall. I don't care if it's a woman. I don't care if it's a man. The bottom line is they are in positions of power as head coaches making a lot of money. So the question to me, if you're going to make this all racial and say this or that, well, okay, what about what would have happened if that was a white coach that did that to a black coach? If you want to make this racial, do you think a white, let's say Greg Gard did what Juwan Howard did towards Juwan Howard and hit a black assistant coach with an open slap or hand or whatever, okay? Let's just invert it, reverse it. Do you think Greg Gard would be fired? There'd be a lot of people on the other side of it that are saying that Juwan Howard shouldn't be fired that would be screaming for Greg Gard to be fired because of the color of his skin. And there are people today, yes, probably white people, that are saying, well, Juwan Howard should be fired because of what he did. And are people saying, I will agree with this. I think there is a racial component from the standpoint of how people who know nothing about the situation other than what they saw on video go on social media and say, well, he's a black man, I want him fired. Or he's a white man, if he's a white coach, he would have been fired. Or it's hypocritical because you know if that was a white coach that did that to a black coach, he'd be fired. But the black coach keeps his job because of everything that's happening today and everybody's scared to fire anybody. See the Chiefs and Eric Bieniemy. Why have we figured this out yet? The Chiefs should already know who their offensive coordinator is, which I believe they already do. And you should already have moved on for Eric Bieniemy if that's what you want to do. Why is that being drug out? Well, part of it is because of the landscape of the way the world is. And there's a lawsuit by a black head coach, former head coach, against the National Football League. So everybody's treading lightly. They're trying to do everything politically correct, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you're looking at this situation, let's not blur this situation with all these other sports situations. This is strictly a situation to me where two coaches let their egos get the best of them. You could argue one was worse than the other. That's fine. You can pick your side. I don't care. If you're picking up based on their color of skin, then you have a bigger problem than you realize. Okay? And you are racist. If you're picking a coach because of the color of his skin, you are racist. If you're picking the person, Juwan Howard, because he's black and you're favoring him, or you're favoring Greg Gard because he's white, you have racism in your body. There's no doubt. If you're judging each coach based on their color of their skin, on how you're going to determine how they should be punished, then you're racist. But you're not, in my opinion. If you're looking at this and you go, listen, Juwan Howard did more than Greg Gard. The punishment fits the crime. I'm cool with everything. Or if that's exactly what you would have done all along, you know, and you're not looking at the color of the skin, you're just simply going, well, let's look at the facts. This is what Juwan Howard did. This is what Greg Gard did. Here's what these players did after the coaches let it get out of hand, so forth and so on. Then you're being objective. So I will agree there are racial undertones in regards to people's opinions on social media where they automatically say, well, you know, I'm supporting Juwan Howard. And this is just another example of some people piling on a black man, and it wasn't all his fault. And I would agree, it's not 100% his fault. It takes two to tango. Totally agree with that. But if you look at this whole thing, Juwan Howard, I don't care if he's black, white, pink, or purple. He just called a timeout recently, and now he's mad about a timeout? Like, you did it a week ago! I don't care what color your skin is! You're a head coach! Like, practice what you preach! Why didn't Ohio State have a big problem with that timeout? Well, the difference is Ohio State was up by 14. All right? The difference here is Michigan was down 15. It was a similar situation about the same time of the game. So be consistent. You're going to get your panties in a bunch about a timeout. First of all, you're a little bit overly sensitive. And second, you know, be a leader, grow up. And once again, don't care about the color of your skin. I don't care if you're 6'10 or 2'10. Grow up. You're the leader of men. Young men, impressionable men. So Juwan Howard, sorry, my man. I don't know you personally. I really don't. And Juwan Howard might be a great person, and he might have made just a mistake. But it's okay to own that mistake instead of waiting until the suspension and then coming out with an apology that is, honestly, to me, a joke. If you can't even get the guy's name right you're apologizing to, that is not contrition. You don't mention the other guy that you got involved with at all. You wait for, I would guess, a lawyer probably wrote it, and then he's reading it. That's it. He didn't read it. It was sent out. I don't even know if he approved of it. He might not have read it himself. So it gets blown out of proportion. I heard people talking yesterday about, well, he's a black man, and if he wasn't a black man, there's no way he'd be fired. And people are calling for his head. It's because he's black. No. No, he threw an open-handed punch, slap, or whatever. I mean, how many times have you seen that after a game where coaches go after each other? Come on, man. This doesn't happen every single day. And then on the flip side, well, if that was a white coach, he'd be fired today. How do you know that? We don't know that. If it was a white coach punching a white coach, would he be fired today? I don't know. If it was a black coach punching a black coach, would he be fired today? I don't know. If it was a black coach slapping a white coach, I don't know. If it was a white coach slapping a black coach, I don't know. All I can tell you is each situation is different. Because here's a couple things I do know about Juwan Howard. One, this isn't the first time he's got into it with a coach after a game. Two, he just called a timeout a week ago that he so despises, but he did it a week ago. Three, his apology is not, I mean, at least there is one out there. But I think it's very clear that he wasn't really planning on apologizing because he doesn't think he did anything that wrong, and I disagree with him.
Obviously, and but
no, I'm a racist. Oh, goodness. I don't agree with Juwan Howard. What is wrong with me? No, I don't look at it as white and black. I look at it as Juwan Howard is a head coach that made a mistake, and he has, I think, the right to redeem himself, and that's why I don't think he should have been fired. I'm okay with him not being fired, and he's going to serve a 5-game suspension. I will say this, and I said it yesterday on the show. I think if he gets into another altercation as a coach, you got to think about firing him, though, because he's had two. One was verbal. This one was obviously more physical. I think you got to sit down with Juwan Howard and say, listen, man, we love you. We want you. You're an alum. You helped us with the Fab Five. People love you here at Michigan. We think you're doing a good job as head coach. We know it's been a tough season. We know you recruit well. We want you to be the coach in the future, but you got to get this under control because this isn't just a one-time thing because it's trending in the wrong direction here for Juwan Howard. So hopefully this is his wake-up call. Now listen, if he threw a close fist punch and knocked the guy out cold, don't you think he's fired no matter the color of his skin?
Yeah.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
I would hope the color of skin don't matter in that situation. But there would still, if that even happened, there'd still be people saying, well, he got what he deserved. Well, that's assault. I mean, that's flat out assault on camera. Mm-hmm. So it just blows my mind, and I shouldn't be surprised at how we make things completely bigger than they are. it's two coaches. It's not, to me, it's not a black man versus a white man. It is two coaches that let their egos get the best of them, and they're both guilty of helping escalate it. And I think Juwan Howard obviously took it too far, and I think the punishments that each of them have got is probably appropriate. Maybe Greg Gard could have got a bigger fine. I don't really think he should be suspended for what anything he did physically myself, because there's proof and pictures that he's held on to other coaches' arms when he's talked to them. But everybody wants to act like he's like stopping Juwan Howard from going anywhere. Do you really think Greg Gard's going to take out Juwan Howard? I mean, come on, people. Let's be realistic here a little bit. Let's not act and sit here and talk to act like Greg Gard's the big bad bully, because he's not. Honestly, I don't think either one of them really is the big bad bully. But I can tell you one thing: if I got in a draw and Howard's yelling at me at 6 foot 10, he'd be more intimidating than 5 foot 9 Greg Gard. I'll tell you that right now. So there are people that want to make it about race, but maybe we're missing the whole point. Maybe everybody's completely clueless to what really happened the other day. Yesterday, I said on the show, you know, listen, you know, they covered, it was the over, the over was covered when it came to gambling. The over under for total points scored in that game was 138. And the total ended up being 140. I'm like, well, it was over. You know what? So, you know, gambling probably wasn't a big part of it. And well, you know what? Let me raise my hand and apologize, because I think I'm wrong on that. I'm going to argue with myself from yesterday, because I went back and watched the last 25, 30 seconds of this video, okay? The whole thing, when the game was actually being played, because I didn't watch this game live on Sunday. And think about this for a second. And let me see if I got it pulled up here. I got the play-by-play right there. Yes. Okay. So let me scroll back down, because it refreshed for some weird reason. So the over-under of the game between Michigan and Wisconsin was 138. 138. With 22 seconds remaining, well, first of all, 25 seconds remaining, Michigan gets a steal, down 17. Devontae Jones makes a layup, 76-61. Over-under is 138. 76-61 is a total of how many?
137.
Say it louder so people can hear you.
137.
Thank you. Full court pressure still being applied after that layup by Michigan. Wisconsin calls a timeout because they're about ready to run out of time in the backcourt. So even after the timeout, where this is when you can sit here and go, listen, the game's over. Just let them run out the clock. What does Juwan Howard have his team do? After the timeout that Juwan Howard hated so much, after the timeout, he has a player of his foul Wisconsin. Whether or not the player decided on his own or whether Juwan Howard told him to. So they foul, down 15 with 13 seconds to go. Michigan fouls.
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin makes a free throw, 77-61. What's the over-under again?
The over-under is 138.
77 plus 61 is?
138.
138. Now, Michigan's down 16. Second free throw by Jordan Davis is missed, so it's still 138. Michigan dribble out the clock. There's no need to shoot it. But they do. They shoot a three-pointer. And then they get an offensive rebound, and they make a layup with 1 second left in the game, and they cover this. They cover the over-under. 77-63 is the final, 140 combined points. Where are the people? Well, I mean, seriously, I want to know. Where are the people that have been talking about the NFL is rigged and college sports are better to watch? Where are they now? Why aren't you up in arms about this? I mean, this to me is more obvious than the that. I mean, honestly, yeah, this is more. This is more.
You believe in those kind of things.
Yes,
this for sure is more than that.
I'm just throwing it out there. The issue in this game might not have anything to do with race. The issue in this game might have everything to do with gambling. Think about this for a second. It was 76 to 59 with 25 seconds to go. Michigan gets a steal and a layup. Michigan still has full court pressure. Why? You're up 15, you're down 15 with 22 seconds. Why are we full court pressing again? Wisconsin calls a timeout. Then Michigan, on after the timeout, when you could simply have let Wisconsin throw it in and be done with the game, even if you're irate about a timeout, just be done with it, move on. Instead, Michigan fouls. Wisconsin, if they make both free throws, that covers the over. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately for them, they make one, miss one. Now we've got to push. Now Michigan pushes up the floor and shoots. They miss, get a rebound. Wisconsin's not probably worried about it. And boom, the over's covered. I am amazed at how many people in this world are all about conspiracy theories. They're conspiracy theories about the NFL being rigged, boxing matches being rigged, tennis matches being rigged. All these people talk about pro sports. Oh, it's so obvious. NFL rigs everything. The NBA is rigged, blah, 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 blah. I'd rather watch college sports, blah, blah, blah. But where are you right now? I mean, this is the greatest example of all to talk about a conspiracy theory. This has got actually connections if you think about it. I mean, it's almost too obvious when you really look at it. And yet, hardly anybody's talking about it. Instead, people want to talk about, and isn't that what we do in society? We don't want to address the root cause of a problem. We just talk about the frivolous stuff on the outside. Like, we want to talk about that we have so much debt in this country and blah, blah, blah. And we got let's cut social welfare programs instead of this gigantic defense budget where we're making tanks to appease somebody to vote for a bill in Ohio. And those tanks aren't even being used. Why? Because it keeps people employed. Hey, great. We're building tanks for no reason because we got plenty of them. We don't even use them much more in war anymore. I mean, we do, but we don't need as many tanks as we're making. But yet we talk about, well, we can't cut defense. Well, they could cut that. That'd save a lot of money. But no. We're going to cut social work and mental health services. That's what we're going to do. We're not going to focus on the real part of the overspending. We're going to focus on the little stuff because that's what's killing us. So we're going to talk about, instead of addressing what I think is honestly a more of an issue in this story than anything, it's you got to sit here and ask yourself about the gambling side of this. You've got to ask yourself about the over-under of this game, and instead people are talking about race. Because it seems like anytime there's a black and a white person involved, no matter what, it's automatically there's racial injustice, which maybe in cases there are. I'm not saying there aren't. I don't think there is here. I think this is a major stretch when people want to sit here and say that Juwan Howard's being punished unfairly because of the color of his skin. No, he's not. He brought it on himself, people. And if Juwan Howard is white, I'd say the exact same thing. But if you're in the conspiracy theories, and where are you people? I mean, I know a lot of people are on this old conspiracy theory stuff. Why aren't you pushing this envelope now? Let me repeat. The over-under of this game was 138. It was 76-61 with 22 seconds to go after a Michigan layup. So you're short three to get to the over-under, right?
Well, you're short one.
You're short one, excuse me.
One to push, two to beat it.
Two to beat it. All you need is one basket to get over. That's it. One basket. Can you not sit there and ask yourself a question and go let's be honest. Why is the reason you press? Why do you press?
To get a turnover and then turn it into a bucket.
Bingo. What's the best way to get a bucket and quickly? Full court pressure.
No.
Why does Michigan need a quick bucket? They're down 15. The game's over with 22 seconds to go. Why are we pressing? Maybe the question we should be asking, instead of why were you upset with the timeout, is, Juwan Howard, why were you pressing, and were you aware that the over-under, you were under by 1 point at that time? Wouldn't that be a hell of a question? Like, if you really want to have some hard-hitting journalism, you just ask Juwan Howard, were you aware of the over-under? Did you know the over-under is 138 and you're pressing when it's 137, down 15 with 15 seconds to go?
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't anybody asking that question? Instead, we're going to talk about how it's racist what's happening. What? Once again, like we usually do in this country, we completely miss the point. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that Juwan Howard in Michigan was trying to cover a spread to make a whole bunch of people money or that they bet on the game. I'm not saying they did, but I'm not saying they didn't.
Mm.
All I'm saying is, if you're going to go as far as to say this is racist because of Juwan Howard and it's a black man versus a white man, to me, I think you've gone a little bit too far. But if you're okay with going there, then allow me to go a little far with my theory,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a lot more, I think there's more to my theory than your theory. Agree? Disagree?
I agree, yeah.
What other reason would you have to be pressing with your starters against backups down 15? What other reason would you have? We're working on a full court pressure defense. Against backups with your starters? We think we still can win the game. You're down 15 with 15 seconds. Nobody's ever come back from that deficit. Ever! What was the reason you kept pressing? And I'm not saying you shouldn't have. That's your right. But why? Oh, I can think of one reason why. You needed to get over. The over-under is 138. You're at 137. So how could you get over? Steal, layup. Why is nobody asking that question? Are people scared?
I would say there's a bunch of people that don't even pay attention to that part.
There are a lot of people that do.
But there are people that do, yeah. So
every broadcaster that covers a game brings it up. Yeah. You got bad beats now. It's the top of SportsCenter talking about bad beats. And by the way, this is a bad beat. A layup with 1 second cost anybody that had the under.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, I mean, there's a sect of people that don't pay attention to that, but there are many people that do. So, right. And I think the people that do pay attention to that aren't asking that question because they really don't want to know the answer and probably don't want to be the people that out it or
don't
want
to expose it.
They probably don't want the backlash of it.
What's the backlash?
Just like everybody getting mad at them for ruining the system or something like that, you know? Because there could be backlash if this thing goes wrong and the bookie that is in Juwan Howard's ear gets a hold of this guy here. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about at a scale like this.
Do you think a media person gets backlash for asking that question?
If it gets out.
What do you mean if it gets out?
That it did happen?
Yeah. Why did a media guy get a backlash?
From the bookie?
The bookie's mad because he got
exposed?
It's
being ruined by this because you messed up my situation.
Because he illegally was point shaving?
Yeah.
And the bookie's going to give the backlash to the media guy.
To coach, media, anybody that's involved. I think it could happen.
Okay, so
I've seen stuff about these kind of things. Right. Yeah, so that could happen.
So we're scared.
I don't know if you're worried about that or not. I'm just saying there might be people that have that in their mind, too. I'm not saying that everybody that knows about that does have that in their mind.
So we're scared to bring up gambling or even ask a simple question. But we're okay with making it all about being racist. It's amazing what we accept and what we don't. I mean, I'm flabbergasted by that. It's crazy. Okay, one more thing before we let everybody go, because I want to play this. This is a 4-minute thing from Tom Izzo. So one more thing out of this whole thing. Dick Vitale and other national media members, once again, here's the knee-jerk reaction. I know Dick Vitale is going through chemotherapy and fighting cancer and everything else. So I say this with respect, but at the same time, he put it out there, and he wasn't the only one. There were a lot of other national media people put it out there, saying, we need to go ahead and just eliminate handshake lines. What's the point of handshake lines? And I'm like, oh, dear Lord. Are we just going to eliminate anything and everything? You know, is that what we're getting to? We can't do anything. We can't take personal accountability and responsibility. Tom Izzo was asked a question, the Michigan State head coach, about eliminating the handshakes after games. Listen to this.
The social media world, which you love, and in the national broadcasting talk shows, there are suggestions, silly as they may be, that we should do away with the handshake line now.
Oh, my God.
Have you heard that?
Oh, my God, I have. And I do got to comment on that, since that's not insulting to anybody. That, to me, would be the biggest farce, joke, ridiculous nature of anything I've ever heard of. We've already taught these poor 18-year-olds that when you know, you're told to go to class and you don't like it, you can leave. We've already told these kids if you're not happy, you can do something else. We've already told these kids that it's hard to hold them accountable, and now we're going to tell them to not man up and walk down a line on somebody who's kicked your butt and have enough class to shake their hand is utterly ridiculous. So if the president said it, I think he's full of it. If the best coach in America said it, I think that gets me way more than this incident, because we're already teaching these kids nothing. and then we're going to do something like that. I mean, I'm going to tell you something. In the last three games, Trace Jackson recruited him hard. I don't like his dad. I love his dad. Great, great guy. I mean, I went down and congratulated him. I told him that it's been glad he stayed another year. It's been fun to have him in the league. Frazier, I said to him in the line, you know, a lot of people get credit on your team, but what you did today defensively, running your team, not taking a shot forever, I said, am I happy for the league that you came back? Now, I said, for me, I wish your tail was out of here, okay? But those are like, those are the moments when I just think that you learn the most about people. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I didn't like it last year when some people waved, you know. I didn't care if I got COVID. I'm going to go down there and shake the guy's hand. And I'm going to try to shake the player's hand. And I don't know what they do in every sport. But somebody says, well, they don't do that in football. Hell, are you kidding me? There's changing jerseys. I mean, I'm a little bit in the Magic Johnson thing when he said that Pat Riley would say, don't be talking to anybody from the Celtics before the game. But when the series was over, you know, that's when the respect factor came. So the people that are saying that are the same people that don't want to teach players accountability, respect, or anything else. How about if we do this? Instead of not having the line, my buddy Mariucci, when he got the San Francisco 49er job, he had a deal where they practiced how they were going to go from the locker room to the field and played the national anthem and how they were going to tuck their helmets under their arm and went through the whole national anthem in practice. I thought that was awesome. So maybe we should teach people how to shake hands and what to do. And you didn't hit a sore spot with what happened. You hit a sore spot with that. I think that is absolutely ridiculous. If that's what we've come to, shame on whoever said it, in my humble opinion. I got to make sure I say in my opinion, because we're all allowed to have an opinion now. So in my opinion, that is asinine.
Amen. You echo that?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well said, Tom Izzo, the voice of reason in today's society. Amen. I'm with you. High school basketball tonight, Smith Center hosting Beloit. 5:50 pregame on KD Country 94, KDCountry94.com, live video stream, NCKSSports.com, with Beloit Trojan Channel. Take what we said, think about it, and you can decide, now that I've put out that theory, do you think that one's a little bit more believable than the other one that's being put out by various people? Great thing about this country, you can make up your own mind and your own decision, have your own opinion.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.